South Florida may not have vineyards or large-scale distilleries, but the booze-making business is here in its own unique way, like mango wine and specialty rum. Liquor in South Florida, after all, means rum. The market has been getting crowded with higher-end rums from the Caribbean and Latin America and specialty small-scale distilleries. I'm Tom Hudson. Coming up, the Sunshine Economy, high spirits, the liquor and wine business in South Florida. Winemaking here means fruit wine, not from grapes, and winemaking tours, which are as important to the business as the wine itself. It's all ahead on the Sunshine Economy, high spirits, the liquor and wine business in South Florida, and it's next on WLRN. This is the Sunshine Economy, high spirits, the liquor and wine business in South Florida. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening. What'll you have? It's a time-honored inquiry between bartender and customer, between host and guest.
My name is Sandra. I live in Coral Springs. My favorite drink is Prosecco, champagne without the heavy price tag.
John in Miami Beach tells our Public Insight Network he likes the American standards, beer, whiskey, and bourbon. Randolph in Miami says his drink of choice is Hennessy with coconut water. Sandra, John, and Randolph may not order rum, but for many in South Florida, rum is the quintessential sunshine drink. Mention rum to many in South Florida, and listen to how some of us talk about it. It's similar to a Kentuckian talking about bourbon or a Scot going on and on about single malt. But single malt scotch is made in Scotland. Bourbon is Kentucky made. Very little rum is actually made in the Sunshine State, but it's certainly consumed here. While there are countless rums, one name has become synonymous with it. Bacardi. Florida's big business for Bacardi. It accounts for more than a tenth of rum sales for Bacardi in America. The company is based in Bermuda with its U.S. headquarters in Coral Gables. Bacardi's product portfolio ranges from Bombay Sapphire Gin to Drambuie, but rum still brings in more than half the company's revenue. WLRN America's editor and resident rum enthusiast Tim Padgett sat down with Bacardi USA's vice president for rum, Toby Whitmoyer, to gauge rum's future, including the company's recent foray into the booming aged rum market.
The heartbeat of Bacardi, although we have a more extensive portfolio, is rum. And the heartbeat of rum in the United States is Florida. So this is our most important market. We do over 11% of our sales here in Florida. It's the most sophisticated rum market in the country. So you'll see labels from very small artisanal producers here in Florida that you won't see elsewhere. So it's a critical market for us. It's also our home. And so we're very dedicated to making sure that our best products are here in the marketplace.
How do Bacardi's rum sales and sales growth trends in South Florida compare with those in other parts of the country and other parts of the world?
2013, we had a positive year. The rum category in general grew about 1% year over year. Florida was very similar to that. That was a national number.
How do those sales also stand up against those of other so-called brown spirits, particularly bourbons and scotches, both regionally, nationally, and globally?
Sure. I mean, one of the biggest trends in the U.S. spirits industry right now is sort of the rise of brown spirits, particularly North American whiskeys like bourbon or Canadian. Obviously, rum is not a brown spirit in that classic sense. The great thing about rum, though, is it is both white and dark. And so we're seeing a lot of great activity on both segments. Probably the dark side of rum is driving a little bit harder, with the consumer really looking for those more complicated aged spirits. And we're seeing that in our results as well.
But there are a couple complications in that future. The spirits industry, on the one hand, is being increasingly dominated today by large conglomerates, like the Japanese company that recently bought Jim Beam Whiskey for $13 billion, and on the other by smaller specialty distillers. Can Bacardi and its rum division in particular stay independent and still compete effectively for global drinkers? And if so, how do you do that?
No, absolutely. I mean, Bacardi is a very unique company as the world's largest privately held spirits company. You know, we have a 153-year history as an independent producer, and we've grown from that small tin roof distillery in Santiago de Cuba to a global company. Now, we do have some very large multinational publicly traded competitors out there in the marketplace, and certainly we compete with them every day. I think on the other side, you have some very small, interesting companies coming up as well. And I think what sets us apart from either the largest players or the smallest players is that We are incredibly dedicated still to the production of our rums. The family, the Bacardi family, is still very involved in the production of the product.
But oftentimes those mega companies aren't as focused on rum.
In this region in particular, in Florida, rum continues to stay number one. It's top of mind. The consumer in South Florida is very connected to rum, either from their own upbringing and family education, or just what's out in the marketplace that they see every single day. Across the rest of the country, that competitive dynamic that you're talking about, it's absolutely there. We compete in a number of categories beyond rum as well, and so we have a pretty good read on the marketplace in general. Although there are challenges, as the category leader, we're very committed to keeping it top of mind with the consumers, and we see a very bright future for rum in the U.S.
How important was Bacardi's major move last year to enter the high-end aged rum market, that world of after-dinner sipping rums that are competing with cognacs today?
The big move last year for us was releasing the Facundo collection, which is the world's first line of luxury rums. A very limited supply. We released it in both Miami, which is our critical home market, as well as New York City. Those are the two places that it's currently available, given the limited supply. So the collection is four different expressions, ranging from what we believe to be the oldest commercially available white rum, Neo, to Eximo, Exquisito, and Paraíso. These are all different styles, and they really show what the passion of the Bacardi family, what are the sort of skill of our maestros de ron can really bring in terms of creating amazing liquids, as well as the unique property that we have in the fact that we've got the world's largest catalog of rums to draw from. So we really view this as a way to continue to pioneer in the industry and help lead the category forward in the U.S. to compete more effectively with many of the other categories that you mentioned previously.
Some might suggest that the trend toward higher-end aged rums has been building for more than a decade now, particularly in the Caribbean, particularly when you look at countries like Barbados and Venezuela and Guatemala with Zacapa, et cetera. Was there a concern that perhaps Bacardi was entering that high-end market perhaps a little too late?
No, actually, we think this is a great opportunity. Agree with you. Certainly in the South Florida market, you've seen more of those higher-end products starting to come in over a longer period of time, given that this is a more sophisticated rum market than most of the United States.
But in terms of the objective of getting that high-end rum more popular in markets outside of South Florida, perhaps less sophisticated palates outside of South Florida, is there a concern that the $250 price tag, for example, for Paraíso might be a hindrance?
There's a fabulous opportunity, we think, within the, let's call it, super premium tier, which in rum is defined between $15 and $25, whereas ultra premium starts at $25 and above. We've got a number of wonderful products that fit into the various price tiers. Really, we think one of the jewels in our portfolio that we're going to be spending a lot more time on is Bacardi 8-Year-Old, which is available nationally and is available in the sort of $25 to $30 range, depending on the marketplace.
And how would you describe the flavors of these aged rums from Bacardi?
From a cocktail standpoint, we always talk about the classic Bacardi rum as neither dominating nor disappearing within a drink, but actually combining. Whereas you think about the aged rums, particularly the ones that we're just releasing on the marketplace now, there's a sophistication and an elegance to the product that I think we believe is truly unique in the marketplace.
WLRN's Tim Padgett speaking with Toby Whitmoyer, Bacardi USA's Vice President for Rum, based here in the Sunshine Economy. Tim will be back a little bit later on in the program with more on rum. What'll you have? Tweet us your favorite wine or cocktail. Use the hashtag Sunshine Economy, the Twitter call sign at WLRN. Still to come on our program, in winemaking, but no grapes in South Dade County.
Amazing feeling to think that you made a bottle of wine. The fact that we're making wine from fruits that nobody's ever made wine from before, it's a little extra special.
This is a pledge special edition of the Sunshine Economy. High Spirits, the liquor and wine business in South Florida. Florida's southernmost winery is located in the heart of Miami-Dade's farm country, Redland. Schnebly Redland's winery has been making wine, fruit wine, technically, for over a decade. If you visit, there is not a grape to be found. Here's the Miami Herald's Karen Rundlett.
For me, the trip to Schneble Redlands Winery meant a couple of hours in the car, heading south on US 1, with a view of Miami-Dade slowing down. Another few miles, fewer lanes and cars. Commercial buildings stop towering as high. Then you drive west, see the open acres. This is where Peter Schneble and his wife Denise planted their winery, Schneble Redlands Winery, over 10 years ago. You hear waterfalls when you walk deeper into the property. An open-air courtyard adorned with coral. The weather is South Florida tourist perfect today. The chill of the cooler actually catches me off guard.
What's the temperature in here?
About 58.
Peter and Denise Schneble met, working in the produce business, almost 25 years ago. Eventually, they turned their produce business into wine. Technically, it's fruit wine, since one key ingredient is missing.
But everything we've made wine from has never had one grape in it.
What do you use to make wine?
Lychees, mangoes, guava, starfruit, avocados, and passion fruit.
Peter Schneble will tell you he started his wine business on the advice of a dear friend, a fellow winemaker who ran a vineyard in upstate New York.
Well, he said to me, he goes, I think you should start a winery. Denise and I looked at each other and we were like, we don't have any grapes, Bill.
And there was that other thing. He'd never done it before.
You didn't have any experience making wine.
No experience making wine.
His buddy had an answer for the no experience excuse. Science.
And he goes, well, winemaking is very simple. And by the way, grapes are a fruit, and what you grow is fruit. So most fruits have acidity, and they have sugar. So if you have acidity and sugar, they will ferment. Okay, and what happens, the yeast eats the sugar, and its byproduct is alcohol. So he goes, your fruits have sugar. And by the way, if your fruit has flavor, then it'll make a wine that has flavor.
Well, it sounds easy enough when you put it like that, but of course, with any new idea, creating it is never as simple as it sounds. Schneble had to do his homework.
So there's plenty of information on how to make wine from a grape. There is no information on how to make wine from a mango or a lychee nut or an avocado or starfruit. There isn't any information.
And while still running their main gig, the produce business, the Schneblies started experimenting.
We were making wine in our garage at night.
That was in 2003. Today, the Schneblies still run their produce business, but they've added a winery, a brewery, a tourist attraction, and a bar, all on the Redland property. He has 34 employees and even talks about making a traditional tropical liquor one day, rum. Just before the lunch hour, folks start rolling in for tastings. We talked business sitting at one of the tasting bars.
What's the potential for revenue growth for the wine business?
I think it's great. You know, I haven't pushed real hard to do wholesale. But lately, since, well, I'd say November, our business has almost doubled in the wholesale part. And for sure, more people coming out every weekend to the winery.
How do you describe South Florida consumers' taste for wine?
I think people are embracing a little bit of the sweeter wines. So more and more people are drinking wines, and the wines they're drinking have maybe between 1% and 3% residual sugar. With a very serious wine drinker or wine that you're pairing with food tends to be at 0% or 1% residual sugar.
What has the best margins? Is it the wine? Is it the tours?
If all I did was sell wine here, I couldn't stay in business. If all I do was tours, I couldn't stay in business. Really what we're selling here is a tasting, a tour, and the wine or the beer.
The Schneblies opened their brewery about 2.5 years ago. Both his beer and wine are available at local stores, but the wine is more prevalent. It's been around longer.
What was it like to uncork your first bottle of Schneble wine?
The biggest thrill ever. I mean, it's just amazing feeling to think that you made a bottle of wine, period. I mean, even if it was a grape wine, it would have been amazing. But now that we think back at it, the fact that we're making wine from fruits that nobody's ever made wine from before, it's a little extra special.
His quirky journey to become a winemaker has left him fearless about taking on beer and other distilled spirits. Schneble rum may soon be on the menu. Reporting for the Sunshine Economy from Redland, I'm Karen Rundlett.
And for what it's worth, appropriately so, a Rundlett is a cask. A Rundlett, Karen Rundlett, a Rundlett is a cask, usually holding wine. Still to come on our program, discovering rum, including the first to be made legally in Miami.
Our goal is truly to be the hometown spirit of Miami.
This is the Sunshine Economy High Spirits, the liquor and wine business in South Florida. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening. So what'll you have? Tweet us your favorite wine or cocktail. Curtis L. tweeted to at WLRN using the hashtag Sunshine Economy. Mojito is his drink of choice. Armando says his favorite rum, Ron Santa Teresa. Juan Del Busto is used to having his fingers on the pulse of the South Florida economy. He spoke regularly with top CEOs, entrepreneurs, business owners, and operators throughout the region when he led the Federal Reserve's Miami branch. He retired recently. Matt Malone, meantime, is from Minnesota originally. His wife's family had been making rum in Puerto Rico for four generations. After his wife's grandfather passed away in 2003, Matt decided to keep the family's heritage going. He began Miami Club Rum beginning in 2012 in Miami. Both are passionate about rum and South Florida's role in the rum business.
I'm Juan Del Busto, chairman and CEO of Del Busto Capital Partners. When you were young, you associated rums with piña coladas, and you drank white rum. And back then, when you were young, you bought cheaper rums, and you mixed it. You didn't know much, but then you started tasting the differences between the white and gold rum, and you saw some complexities there. And then as you started associating that, and when I got older and I was able to afford other types of rums, more expensive ones, then you see aged rums, not only white and gold, but more dark and richer rums. And you found out the age process and the added complexities, nuts, cinnamon, flowers, and you started developing those tastes. And then what you liked, maybe sweetness, maybe the finish, you started adding more and more complex brands to your portfolio. And now rum is getting more and more sophisticated.
Matt Malone, founder and president, Miami Club Rum. Well, the product is a platinum rum made from South Florida sugarcane juice and molasses. And it is a traditional Caribbean-style rum. It's aged 18 months. We then, at that point, it's a dark rum. Then we filter the color out using a special coconut process that we have. So it turns back to a clear platinum rum.
A lot of Americans have switched to drinking more aged, sophisticated rums. So companies are out there developing more rich, sophisticated rums.
We believe in local for a lot of different reasons. We use local sugarcane and molasses to create the product. We manufacture it by hand here. And in a way, it's a lesson that we're trying to teach our kids, that we have resources here, and we should look at those resources and try to do something with them rather than assume that everything we eat or drink or make or use has to come from somewhere else.
Everyone has their favorite. If you're from Venezuela, you might ask for Cacique. If you're from Nicaragua, Flor de Caña. If you are from Guatemala, of course, you ask for one of my favorite rums, Zacapa. So each person coming, Haiti, Barbacourt, outstanding rum that Haitians produce, Barbacourt rum. So everybody has their favorites.
I was told that the path would be very difficult. It had never been done before. This is the first distillery in the history of Miami. When I went to the city and the county, they were extremely helpful.
I drink rum neat or with one ice cube. And I drink from 21-year-olds all the way to 30-year-old rums. And that's what I enjoy. If you want to have rum and coke, you'd have a white rum or you'd have a spiced rum.
The brand Miami has international appeal. It's one of the sexiest brands in the world. We happen to own Miami Club for all spirits as a trademark, so I think we're very fortunate in that respect.
The rum industry continues to grow, and you do not have to be really big to produce a great rum. There's a few small rum companies that have developed, one in Montana, few in our state that might have two or three individuals, one in our own backyard in Wynwood. And they produce great rums, but they're very small.
With the numbers that we look at, about 1 in 400 brands survive. Long odds, exactly. We feel like we have an advantage in that we are truly local, not a gimmick. I think we make fantastic rum. We're getting great response. And I think that the local people here in Miami, once they realize that it is a local product, they do support us, so we get that shelf space.
The barriers are, of course, a lot of competition. There's a lot of rums out there, so you have to have a niche. And you have to have a great product to get out there and have people really start tasting it and then developing a taste for it and then the demand. And of course, like every good company on spirits, they need to get the bartenders to sell it. That's the key to any spirit. Be creative in coming up with new cocktails with your particular rum and getting it out there and having bartenders mix it for you.
We're creating cocktails that reflect Miami also. So we have about a dozen cocktails that we've created with local mixologists that have a Spanish Miami flair. We call one Mijita, which is Miami Club rum with cranberry, a little bit of lime and mint. We also make something called a Preparate, and that is made with tea or té and pear, para, mm-hmm. with Miami Club rum, a little bit of ginger and lemon.
You know, I have over 1,600 different rums, over 2,000 bottles. And let me tell you, out of my 1,600 different rums, most of them I would open up for anybody, with the exception of about maybe 10 bottles. There's some bottles that were given to me special. One of them was from a Bacardi family member, and he asked me, please do not open this bottle unless Cuba is free.
That bottle remains corked. Juan Del Busto there. He's the former regional executive of the Federal Reserve Branch in Miami. He has no connection to Miami Club Rum, but we did hear there from the founder and CEO, Matt Malone, of Miami Club Rum, both of them talking about rum in South Florida. Still to come on this Pledge edition of the Sunshine Economy, stirring up a rum revolution.
The quality rum is good. The perception of rum is wrong. It was perceived as ordinary when, in fact, it's fascinating.
This is the Sunshine Economy. High spirits, the liquor and wine business in South Florida. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening. Rum and South Florida have something in common. They both want to be taken seriously. Few people are doing more than the Burr family to raise rum's stature and Miami's standing as the world's rum showcase. And who better to visit these connoisseurs and soak in their rum revolution than WLRN's America's editor Tim Padgett.
Well, here we have a little setting that's designed, I think, to be a reflection of how we want to taste rum. We have a little waterfall.
If you died and went to rum heaven, you'd eventually find your way to Rob Burr's patio deck. From the waterfall pond to the tiki bar, it sets the perfect mood for Burr's favorite spirit. Actually, rum is more like a family passion for Burr, his wife Robin, and their son Rob Jr., who constitute one of the most expert teams of rum aficionados in South Florida. Their house in Coral Gables is a veritable rum repository. Shelves, tables, closets are filled with enough fine rum to dazzle a Caribbean pirate.
I guess there's probably 1,000 or 1,200 rums sitting around here.
The Burrs taste all of it as meticulously as wine lovers sip cab for their authoritative Rob's Rum Guide and for next month's annual Miami Rum Fest, which drew 12,000 visitors last year. But their mission is broader. They're determined to win the same respect for rum that whiskey and cognac have long enjoyed, to raise rum above the stature of Captain Morgan to, say, Napoleon.
We would call it a renaissance. The quality rum is good. The perception of rum is wrong. It was perceived as ordinary when, in fact, it's fascinating.
How fascinating becomes apparent as soon as the trio sits down to gather tasting notes on a newly discovered rum. Like wine and single malt scotch, rum is a product not just of its source, in this case sugarcane, but of its terroir, the tropical soil, climate, and blending skills involved.
There's already a big, dark, dried fruit rum.
Yeah, I'm getting a lot of dried fruit. I get like...
Dried fruit, chocolatey port, sherry barrels, cola notes, overripe bananas, even a balsamic-y hint of rotted wood. As Robin points out, all the flavors of the Caribbean floating in their glasses.
For me, I always look at the color and the clarity of the rum. This particular rum is very golden brown. That is very appealing to me.
Their son, Rob Jr., and yes, I checked his ID, has developed his own impressive tasting skills, which he's about to try out on an exquisite bottle.
This is a special anniversary, 150-year anniversary of rum Barbancourt that I picked up in Haiti. I don't know where anywhere else I could get it. I had to go directly to them. This is actually closer to cognac. in my opinion.
Rum as the new cognac. Don't tell anyone anymore that it's just for spring break, especially not the Burr clan. I'm Tim Padgett in Miami.
Now, Tim will revisit rum in South Florida and the Burrs in April for his Latin America report. The practice of fermenting fruit into wine dates back millennia and across civilizations. But much like modern South Florida, rum is a relative newcomer. Both are maturing and exerting influence on global commerce. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening.
If you ever go down Trinidad, they make you feel so very glad. Calypso sing and make up rhyme, guarantee you one real good fine time. Drinking rum and coke.